Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Like every week, I'm alongside my co-host Fred Altvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Carlos, I am fantastic. It's a beautiful day. The tour is moving up the California coast to Pebble Beach. I always like to watch Pebble Beach. Lydia Ko remains number one in the Rolex rankings. Greg Norman turns 60 today. Carlos, we got a lot to talk about. Let's go.
Yeah, Greg Norman is the man of the six decades right now, so happy birthday to him. And we're going to have our very important VIG, very important guest of the week. His name is Darren McEntee, the managing director of Logic Technologies Limited, co-founder of iTrainer Golf and Cork Tree Limited. So that's coming up a little bit later on. But as usual, we start with the Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network. Fred, you've always been talking about the caddies, you brought up the lawsuit last week, so you have some more information. This is getting deeper now. What's going on?
Oh, yeah, Carlos, the rhetoric is it's heating up. Things are getting a little bit more juicy. As you mentioned, last week we announced that the $50 million lawsuit filed by the PGA Tour caddies against the tour for not being compensated for wearing the caddy bibs loaded with corporate logos during tournaments, that was filed in Northern California last week. The media positioning and the rhetoric have started to generate quotes aplenty. PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Finchem responded to the lawsuit this week. The historical process is they are employees of the player. We think that's been a good system. He probably would, because the player pays him. It doesn't cost the tour anything. The extent to which this lawsuit challenges that system, for whatever reasons they have in the lawsuit, from a legal standpoint, it is what it is. But we would like to continue that system and let it go on. I'm sure he would. Yeah, no kidding. Take the $50 million in advertising dollars and make someone else do the work. Usually doesn't work that way in America, Tim. I hate to tell you, but newsflash. Last Wednesday, Finchem said at the tournament in a press conference, the player makes an arrangement with somebody that's going to carry the bag and work with him. They work out a financial arrangement. The historical process is the player handles that. The lawsuit, which claims the PGA Tour reaps over $50 million annually from bib endorsements, follows years of complaints from caddies on wide-ranging issues such as lack of access to health care and benefits, and adequate on-site parking. According to the lawsuit, the PGA Tour threatened to prevent caddies from working at tournaments organized and promoted by the organization if they refused to wear the bibs. So Finchem said they're not employees. They don't really work for us. They work for the player, but we're going to mandate that they wear these signs and carry them around all day. Okay, I see how that works. Over the last 15 years, we in our tournaments have taken a number of steps to make the experience for a caddy as good as possible. Yeah, Carlos, I've seen some of those. It's like 95 degrees, and they get a tent with some Cokes in it in the cooler. That's making it really good. He pointed to increasing players' purses because they get a percentage, then they make a little bit more money that way. We've made progress, but there's obviously things we can do better. Nice understatement, Tim. On the other side of the argument, the caddy's attorney, Gene Eggdorf, stressed to the tour players that the lawsuit filed by the caddies is not about the players or against the players, doesn't involve them or their money. In response to Finchem's comments last week, Eggdorf said, The tournament is intent on continuing to use caddies as human billboards without compensation and to control the caddy endorsement deals. He also said that Fincham informed players that bibs, which are a central component of the lawsuit, are not mandatory, but according to the tour's regulations handbook, caddies are required to wear them. So, you know, a little bit of who knows what there. Eggdorf also explained that any type of funding for a caddy retirement program and improved health insurance, which is why the caddies are suing, would not come from either the players' retirement funds or tournament purses. Most retirement plans do not allow for manipulation of the plan for matters like this, Eggdorf said. We suggest that you review the retirement plan with your financial advisor and legal counsel. We think you will find the tour is, again, blowing smoke and creating havoc. Nice way of saying you're kind of full of crap. Clear up your eyeballs. The caddies lawsuit also included a request for an injunction to protect the caddies from retribution either from the players they work for or the tour. By this lawsuit, the caddies do not have, not, and have no intention of involving you. The caddies simply want to be treated fairly by the tour for what they do. Further the tour's initiatives, he wrote. The tour's policy is not to comment on ongoing litigation. So, Carlos, these are just the opening salvos in this mess. So, when you start talking $50 million and get lawyers involved, it's going to be a big mess. And you know, we could just ask Rory McIlroy about this because he knows all about attorneys and big legal messes, I think.
Oh, he definitely knows. And he knows about millions of dollars as well. And let me tell you, his lawsuit, finally, his case against his former management company, Horizon Sports Management, was settled, of course, off the court last Wednesday. As part of that agreement, it is understood that he will be paying the firm more than every time I just read this number, I just get $25 million, which is 21.8 million pounds, plus cost as part of the settlement. They just mentioned millions like it's, out-of-pocket money. The payment is a once-off and concludes the legal dispute between the parties. In that high court last Wednesday, the counsel for the golfer told the court that the entire matter had been resolved. I hope so. Mr. Justice Brian Cragen congratulated both sides on reaching an agreement and wished both Horizon and McIlroy lots of success in the future. Details of the settlement were not disclosed to the court. A joint statement issued afterwards by both parties said the legal dispute between Rory McIlroy and Horizon Sports Management, and I quote, had been settled to the satisfaction of both parties who wish each other well for the future. Well, that last part, I don't know if it's true, but we'll believe it. That's what they said. You know, the statement said the parties would be making no further statement. Mr. McIlroy was not in court on Wednesday, and the Horizon CEO, Connor Rich, was present. The hearing was due to get underway on Tuesday when the judge was told the case was scheduled to last 8 weeks, and there were many issues involved. Both sides were seeing if they could narrow those issues, and the case was adjourned twice to allow discussions continue, which went on into Tuesday's evening. Mr. McIlroy attended court on Tuesday and sat in a reserve bench, along with a number of others, for the morning adjournment and for the one in the later in the day. He was supported by business executive Barry Flinston, who oversees the golfer's charitable work through the Rory McIlroy Foundation, and his cousin, Brian McIlroy. The dispute had been expected to have involved arguments over tens of millions in lost commissions and earnings from potentially massive sponsorship deals and wins on the course. It had been expected to last 8 weeks, like I mentioned. It centered on McIlroy's contract with Dublin-based Horizon and two other link companies, the Malta-based Gertin and Canavan Management, also based in the Irish capital. The Gold Star, who took up the game as a youngster in Hollywood, Codown, and now has a home in Florida, claims the terms he signed were inferior to those given to the other top 10 players, including fellow countryman and major winning friend Graham McDowell, who was in the same stable. Since McIlroy's split with Horizon in 2013, his business interests have been overseen by Rory McIlroy Incorporated, which is headed by Donald Casey, formerly of Horizon, his father Jerry, and Mr. Funston. So, Fred, finally, we can say Rory can now focus fully on finally getting his career Grand Slam and the Masters. And, hey, he's off to a great start, and we talked about that last week.
Did you happen to see there were betting odds for who was going to get called in to testify? And there were odds of if Tiger Woods was going to get called in, if Caroline Wozniacki was going to get called in. They'll bet on anything in Europe. Did you? I don't know if you saw that or not. But. Hey, let's talk a little. We talked a little bit the other week about Olympic drug testing for golfers. ESPN had a story about Olympic drug testing last week. You know, although we have had some incidents on the PGA Tour's drug policy being exercised here in the last few months, the most stringent process of Olympic drug testing will start May 6th of 2016 for players who might be eligible for the U.S. team. PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Fincham said any player who would be eligible on May the 6th will have to make themselves available for testing at any time. That process was developed by the International Golf Federation and the World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA. If you remember, we had Ron Green Jr. on the show a couple weeks ago from Global Golf Post, and he said that mandatory drug testing through WADA and sanctioned by the IOC is much more stringent than the current PGA Tour's policy, and that potential Olympic athletes must make themselves available at all times for testing. A country can have as many as four players at the 2016 Games, provided they are within the top 15 in the world ranking. Otherwise, countries can have no more than two players. Each week, depending on the ranking, the pool of players can change depending on their ranking in the top 15. The testing will go on through the competition. The list could change. It could change between the time the pool is set and when the actual field is set, all kinds of things, he said. But the drug testing would remain on the PGA Tour even if golf is no longer a part of the Olympics after 2020. The IOC votes in 2017 to determine whether golf is going to stay a permanent competition in the Olympics. We didn't go to drug testing simply because of the Olympics, Fincham said, and we didn't go to drug testing before because we felt we had a PED problem. We went to drug testing because the perception across the board in sports is that athletes dope. We even had questions raised about our sport. We felt that the image of our sport and our athletes is the number one asset by a big margin. And in our defense, we want to be able to demonstrate that our players don't use PEDs. Well, two players have been disciplined, Doug Barron and Bhavik Patel on the Web.com Tour over the past couple years. You know, they were kind of minor issues. And then there's the question about whether Dustin Johnson was or wasn't suspended for 6 months for a third-time offense in the policy last year. But anyhow, the guys that are going to play on the Olympic team are going to have a lot more stringent drug testing than what the PGA Tour now requires, Carlos.
I'm just not going to say any names about who might be trying to skip this drug testing, so let's keep it at that. Hey,
there you go.
I have a story about Bethpage Black. You know, it will be hosting the PGA Tour playoffs well into the next decade.
Is that the golf course with the sign? Says don't even think about playing this place unless you know what you're doing a little bit.
Yeah, that one. That's so that's why I'll never play it. So. I'm just going to report about it. You know, it's, they'll be hosting the PGA Tour playoffs well into the next decade. And that's because Governor Andrew Cuomo, he said that the Barclays, the first event in the FedEx Cup, will be returning 2021 and 2027 as part of an agreement reached between New York and the Tour. The announcement ensures a continued high-profile presence in pro golf for the Black Course, which had an uncertain tournament future after two rain-soaked U.S. Opens in 2002 and 2009. The U.S. Golf Association did not show an interest in returning, especially after stark criticism over handling of ticket refunds in 2009. But the PGA of America and the PGA Tour did see value in the famous course that features a warning sign near the first tee, pointing out the layout's difficulty. You said it, Fred. The former previously worked out an agreement with the Cuomo administration to hold the 2019 PGA Championship and the 2024 Ryder Cup at Bethpage. The latter one is one of the most valuable events in golf, with partisan fans shouting for either the U.S. or European teams. Players and officials consider Bethpage, with its passionate fans, a perfect match. The tour also liked what it saw in Bethpage and included it in the rotation for the first of its four playoff events. Nick Watney won the first Barclays at Bethpage in 2012. The tournament is scheduled to return in 2016. Rose Harvey, who's the State Parks Commissioner, thanked Cuomo, and I quote, "for believing in Bethpage State Park and its dedicated staff." Tour pros have been impressed with the way a heavily trafficked municipal course can stand up to major championships and top tour competition. You know, there was some criticism about the hardness of the greens after the third round of the 2012 Barclays, but players were generally satisfied after the final round. I have to say, you know, among those players was Sergio Garcia, whose first trip to the Black was marked by some testy exchanges, as you might remember, with the fans during the 2002 Open. You know, he was just misunderstood. But now he has nothing but praise for the place. He was all smiles when he was there for a promotional event last June. He has played three big tournaments there and has finished in the top 10 each time. During his June appearance, Fred, he said, "It's nice to be back here. It's a good course. It's been good to me. I've always liked it." I'm not going to say that he said just the fans I didn't like, so I'll leave it at that.
Well, you know, Carlos, evidently the PGA and the PGA Tour are like those huge, rowdy New York crowds that show up at any event held there at Bethpage. Or could it be that they just like the big TV ratings and the huge ticket sales and the money they get? I bet that's probably it.
No. How could you say that?
No. I can't imagine. No. Hey, USGA's in the news. You know, they've been pretty quiet over the winter here, but they announced last week the addition of the U.S. Senior Women's Open to begin in 2018. A coincidence? That's also the same year Susie Whaley is to take office as the first woman president of the PGA of America.
Nah.
Times are changing, Carlos. Even in this good old boy golf establishment, wonder when they will have women execs at the USA. Can pigs fly yet? Speaking of women, did you see that Dame Laura Davies and Annika Sörenstam have been voted in as members of the RNA? I can't think of two more deserving members of golf's ruling body for the rest of the world. Well, anyway, back to the USGA, Carlos. No date or venue has been decided for the 2018 U.S. Senior Women's Open. I guess if you're getting $1 billion, that's billion with a B, Carlos, from Fox to broadcast your tournaments, you can add at least one or two more events. Speaking of Fox News or Fox Sports, the USGA principal media partner and newest best buddy will be airing over 300 hours of coverage across 8 championships and a record 38.5 hours of coverage from the 2015 U.S. Open at Chambers Bay alone. That should certainly be enough for Joe Buck and Greg Norman for any golf fan. You've got Fox coverage begins with the inaugural U.S. Open four-ball championship May 5th and 6th. from Olympic Club and the women's amateur four ball from Brandon Dunes the following week. And then wraps up at the end of the summer with the U.S. Amateur August 19th through 23rd at Olympia Fields. In between, they will broadcast the men's and women's U.S. Opens, the girls and boys junior amateurs, the women's amateur, and the U.S. Senior Open. The Fox Golf team will include, as I mentioned, Joe Buck and Greg Norman in the tower, Holly Saunders, who left the Golf Channel's Morning Drive to join Fox, ex-USGA President David Fay, Shane O'Donoghue, Steve Flesch, Corey Pavin, Julie Inkster, and Brad Faxon. And Carlos, that wraps up the Par 5 news for February the 10th, 2015. And we are happy to have United Golf Network as a sponsor for the Par 5 news. United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn some money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, who turned 60 today, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available through United Golf Network with discount coupons for huge savings. United Golf Network not only has excellent product line, it offers every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on product through their director's program. United Golf Network provides instant and free access to Global Affinity, which offers discounted travel through Wyndham Endless Vacations. Another free perk is membership to My Golf in U.S., which offers discounted golf rounds in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. And finally, For Sale by Owner allows you to sell used or new equipment and earn sales credits on every sale. Visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today and check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity. Carlos, back to you.
Yes, remember that United Golf Network was created by entrepreneurs to give golfers the opportunity to play golf, make money, and enjoy life. And that was the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. Now it's time for our VIG, our very important guest of the week. And his name is Darren McEntee. He's the Managing Director of Logic Technologies Limited, co-founder of iTrainer Golf and Cork 3 Limited. And it's this last one that we're going to be talking more about. So, Fred, let us know about this interview.
Carlos, I had the opportunity to talk with Mr. McEntee, who is leading this new company with a completely new concept of golf grips. They use leather made from cork. You know, like the stopper in your wine bottle? You know, cork from trees can be made into leather and used to wrap golf grips. Who knew? They intend to make golfers rethink the grips they use on their clubs, beginning with their putters. In this interview, he talks about the process and how the company came to be. It's quite interesting talking to him.
Let's play the interview.
We are here this evening with Darren McEntee, who is with Cork Tree Grips. And it's a relatively new company, and he is actually in Phoenix, Arizona this week. We're taping this during the Waste Management Phoenix Open, and he's down there helping to launch the product with all the activity and everything going on in Phoenix. I'm sure you have plenty to do right down there. Welcome to the show, Darren.
Oh, thanks very much. Thank you. I said myself and my two business partners, Mark Bozier, who's from the British PGA, and Nuno Nascimento, who his grandfather gave him a 1,200-acre cork forest many years ago to look after. And, the planets sort of aligned, and the three of us got together and decided to start this business. So, it's been good fun so far.
You know, you said you got together. How did you get together? And you know, how did the company get started? And cork, as I understand from reading something a little bit about the company, I mean, it you can create a leather-like product from the cork. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. So I'll give you a little bit of background, Fred. So Nuno's based in Portugal, where more than 60% of the world's cork comes from. And most people associate cork with cork stoppers for champagne and wines. But the use, and something I never realized until I met Nuno 2 years ago at a German golf show in just outside Munich. The cork's used in everything from flooring materials. You've probably seen it in shoes. Even the space shuttle had cork insulation. So it's pretty amazing material. So it's basically the bark of a tree, of a cork oak. And what they do is then over the number of years, that the cork is essentially the skin that grows, just like our skin, you know, grows layer upon layer. But the cork seed, once you plant a cork seed, it takes 25 years for the tree to grow before you can actually first harvest the skin. And essentially what you do is you take a large knife and split the skin down the middle, and then just underneath the first branch and at the base, you slice around the tree. And you basically peel the skin off. It doesn't hurt the tree at all. It's just a natural process. It's like a lot of other sort of animals shed their skin and regrow. And then it takes another 9 years before you can harvest the cork again. But it's a pretty amazing material. It has a kind of a honeycomb structure to it if you look under a microscope. And that's what gives it. It's very strong. It's very flexible. Now, cork will maintain more than 96% of its original shape and elasticity, over the life of the product. And it's also waterproof, or what we call impermeable to water. So, for things like golf grips, I mean, it's fantastic when your hands are hot and sweaty. It's very soft and elastic, but it doesn't absorb water. But it's also fantastic in cold conditions because of its insulating properties, because of its honeycomb shape. So even when it's cold, I wouldn't suggest to go and play in sub-zero temperatures. But we've had a lot of the European tour pros and a lot of guys on the Asian tour, especially up in Japan and Korea during the colder months, saying how fantastic the grips have been. To use in the colder months, because unlike rubber and other synthetics, it has natural insulation properties, and even when the hands are cold, it manages to absorb a little bit of the hands' heat and remain soft as well, during the playing round, unlike, other materials that tend to change their structure as the temperature shifts.
So really some of the advantages from what I'm hearing you is, number one, it's a green product. It's very environmentally friendly. By using the environment, the trees, the bark that's going to shed off anyhow in using putter grip. And the other thing is, because of the nature of the product, it performs very well in adverse conditions like cold or rain, those kind of things.
Actually, the last few days we've been down here in Phoenix, and we've been meeting with some of the players and their managers, and also a lot of the well-known putter manufacturers and some of the lesser-known putter manufacturers. And we have a little sort of a trick that, well, it's not a trick, but basically we take a grip and we submerge it in water, so just a bucket of water, and we hand it back to the caddy or the player or the putter manufacturer and ask them to, wipe it down and then just start using it. And they're all amazed that, even after just submerging in water and wiping it down once, how playable the grip is. It feels a little bit damp, if you like, but not wet. But because of the properties of the cork, it actually sticks to the hands, not like a tacky stickiness, but it just feels like something like a second layer of skin in your hand. It's pretty amazing stuff. So again, the nature of the material, that whether it's wet or in a hot humid conditions, it just performs well.
You had mentioned that you had done a lot of testing with it. You've gotten feedback. You have 22 professional players currently using the cork grips on their putters, and you're now kind of launching it to the mass golfing public. And so, where can our listeners find and purchase these grips to put on their putter?
Well, we're currently setting up for a shipment down to the US. We have a number of retailers, and I can't mention at the moment, but the most well-known retail stores will be stocking the product. We will make that information available in coming two or next fortnight. We have a number of individual retail stores too, so there'll be a number of specialty stores. We're starting in the south, as I mentioned, so Arizona, Phoenix, and then California. So the typical golf retailers that people generally buy their golf equipment will be stocking the product. You can also buy it online on our website. And there'll be a number of, as I mentioned, specialist outlets, also a number of golf clubs. So we're starting with Arizona, and there'll be a number of golf clubs. There's at least 25 golf clubs that will be stocking the product. And putter manufacturers, of course, being a putter group, we've been working with a number of putter manufacturers. And then, as it warms up, we will generally we'll move up into the northern states. So we're starting off fairly small, and in terms of quantities, we didn't want to overcommit or overstep the mark, because there's a lot of support that goes into launching a new product, and for us essentially a new business in North America. And then we'll gain some feedback over the next 3 to 6 months, and hopefully, as I said, the market will accept the product well, and then we'll towards the latter part of the year really start to see our volumes increase. But it really depends on how the market receives the first product, and also we have to get the name out there. We need to have the product endorsed officially by some of the golf professionals. So the moment we have a number of options, we're fairly fortunate that we've got quite a number of well-known golfers using the product, and we obviously need to decide which of those that we can afford to help endorse the product, and then take it from there.
The website you mentioned is corkputtergrips.com.
That's correct.
CORKPUTTERGRIPS.com. You can go online in the future. You will have a listing of the retail outlets that they are available, and you will be able to buy them online also. So your company philosophy, the cork is 100% natural, biodegradable, and sustainable material. Cork leather has unlimited design possibilities. Matter of fact, you have other products. I think it's used to, you're doing some golf bags and some other things too, correct?
We do. As I mentioned, the founder of the original cork tree company, Nuno Nascimento, and I met him just over 2 years ago, as I mentioned, and he'd already won a number of awards around the world, and he got first prize in Europe for his cork leather golf bag, and that was how I met him. In fact, I met Nuno at a golf show. We were talking about another product that we're involved with, and then as we got into the discussion, he brought me over to his golf bags and introduced me to cork leather, and it was pretty amazing. And he was really focused on golf bags and head covers. I mean, the head covers are, that we also offer come in that something different. In the industry, typically it's very traditional, and even though there are new products that come onto the market, we've not really seen, in terms of golf grips and materials, haven't seen anything that we that really stands out in the last few years. The industry makes sort of small step changes, but this cork material we think is going to have a wide range of use in the industry, and things that we probably haven't even thought of yet. Well, definitely. There are a lot of innovative companies out there, and we've already had inquiries from other companies to buy our cork and cork leather assembly. When Nuno came to Hong Kong and we were looking at launching some other products, we just came up with the idea of taking a cork leather material and wrapping it around an existing core, and then we stitched the backside together, and then that was really the birth of the product. And it was I'd like to claim that it was some engineering genius, but no, it was
three of us getting together thinking, "Hey, this looks really cool." So we handmade some grips, and we took existing grips and removed the outer layer and replaced it with cork leather, and we gave it to some tour pros that we know in Asia. And China's number one golfer, Lian Wenchong, he learnt golf from Mark Bogier, as I mentioned before. Mark is one of the three owners of Cork Tree. And we gave it to Chong, and he started playing with it. And now he had an equal first last year in Japan. He had two thirds, and he just said, this stuff's amazing. So he's well known on the Asian circuit, and he's a really lovely guy, very down to earth. And he started handing out to his buddies that he plays with on tour. And then within a few months, we had all these guys contacting us, saying, where can we get one of these grips? the other guys are having some success, and that was really how it all took off. We've got a four-time Open winner using our grips. We've made a couple of hybrid versions for him. There's a gentleman down, Danny Willett, last year at the Ned Bank Challenge. We've made a custom version for him. He won the Ned Bank Challenge, and so we'll claim that it's.
You're coming to talk to us today, and log on to Cork. PutterGrips.com for the whole story. It talks about the cork coming from forests primarily in Portugal along the Mediterranean ocean there along the coast. And again, thanks, Darren, and we want to wish you all the best with your new product.
Wonderful. Thanks very much, Fred. Thanks for the opportunity, and hopefully we can get together as well and have a round soon when the snow falls in or some of the snow stops in up in Ohio there. So.
I look forward to it, and you take care and be safe in your travels.
Thanks very much, Fred. All the best.
There you have it. That was Darren McEntee, the Managing Director of Cork Tree Limited. And, Fred, I am going to have a tough time disassociating cork from the wine bottle. But once I think I can get past that, I think I can get a grip on it. So. Very interesting.
Well, I can't wait to actually see the product and touch it. Going from a cork like a wine bottle or a fishing bobber or whatever to a leather product that can be wrapped and used in shoes and golf bags and golf grips is kind of unique. But Carlos, I have to tell you, Mr. McEntee lives in Hong Kong. He's lived there for many years. The cork is grown in Portugal, so it's truly an international company. You know, some of the pros they have are using it are Asian tour players and Japanese tour players right now. But he was very familiar with Toledo. He has been here several times. There was a company that he worked with that is headquartered here, and he had been working with them for several years. So. Carlos, here I am in Toledo, Ohio, right in the center of the golf world. What can I tell you, man?
I knew that the least opportunity you get, you were going to say something like that. So it doesn't surprise me anymore. It doesn't surprise me. Anyway, that was our VIG of the week. Very important guest of the week segment. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we have our practice range, and we're going to pay our dues to two true legends of the sport, Billy Casper and Charles Sifford. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range segment. We take a topic every week, and Fred and I give our take on each one of those topics. This week, unfortunately, Fred, in the span of 7 days, we lost two legends of the sport, Billy Casper and Charles Sifford. Let's start by talking about Billy Casper. After an illustrious golf career that spent more than four decades, Billy Casper, one of the sport's legends, died of a heart attack on Saturday at his home outside Los Salt Lake City, and that was said by his son Bob, who told the Associated Press he died at the time he was 83. Casper started his career in 1955, and he was renowned for his putting. He went on to become one of the most accomplished golfers in the sport's history. His resume included 51 PGA tournaments, putting him 7th on the U.S. circuit's all-time list, 2 U.S. Opens, and a Masters. Every year from 1956 to 1971, Casper won at least one tournament. He played on 8 consecutive Ryder Cup teams. He was PGA Player of the Year twice and won events on the organization's Senior Tour 9 times. Yet, he remained one of the sport's least known legends. Even the World Golf Hall of Fame, which inducted Casper in 1978, noted his relative obscurity as a top-drawer golfer. I know, Fred, you will touch on this and more, but in the early 1960s, agent Mark McCormack dubbed his key golf clients Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, and Gary Player, the Big Three. With McCormack's marketing help, their publicity skyrocketed. But Fred Casper was a colorful figure, but never had that star power of his chief competitors. But today, we honor him as one of the true legends and examples of the sport.
Yeah, you know, Billy Casper has received more press in the last few days since his death at the age of 83 than he ever did as one of the best players in the game from, as you mentioned, the 1950s into the late 1970s. His place in golf history is secure. As you mentioned, he was inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame in 1978, had the 51 tour wins, 7th all-time. The 3 majors, 1959 and 1966, he won U.S. Opens, and he added the 1970 Masters. You know, he said that of his wins, the 1966 U.S. Open was really the most satisfying. You know, as many players have said, you know, you can get lucky and win one major. You can have a really hot week and everything works for you, and you can win once. But when you win a second time, that's not luck. That's true talent. And he added a third major, the 1970 Masters. In 1966, he will ever, if he never did anything else in golf, he would be remembered for winning the 1966 U.S. Open at Olympic Club in San Francisco. He made up 7 shots in 8 holes on the back 9 of the final round to tie Arnold Palmer, the hottest golfer on the planet at the time, and then the next day on Monday beat him in a playoff. Palmer, you know, he choked. He you know, things started getting away from him on the back 9, and he started coming over and hitting some low duck hooks, and Casper just played fantastic. You know, one guy can – I mean, he had a 7-shot lead. Palmer had a 7-shot lead with 9 holes to go. So, you know, you can play bad, but you still should win. The fact of the matter is that Casper played fantastic. He was knocking it close, making putts, and he could make some putts. That was his claim to fame. He was a great putter. But, you know, some of the other numbers, as you mentioned, 8 Ryder Cup teams. He was the captain of the winning 1979 Ryder Cup team, winning at least one event in 16 consecutive years. And a lot of those years he had multiple wins, 3 and 4 and 5 wins per year. I mean, those are Tiger numbers. He won the money title twice, and he won the Vardon Trophy 5 times. So that shows his consistency week in and week out. You don't win the Vardon Trophy by just having a couple good weeks. You got to play good all the time. The only mistake that Billy Casper ever made in his whole golf career was not signing with Mark McCormick's IMG in the 60s. You know, he was a friend of Mark McCormick. You know, he liked McCormick. And he tells the story that McCormick wanted him to sign a contract with IMG, and there was something in the contract that Casper just couldn't agree with. There was just one little thing, and McCormick said, "Oh, don't worry about it. Just go ahead and sign it." And And, you know, Casper got a stubborn streak, and he wouldn't do it. He ended up going with somebody else. Well, so McCormick then went out and promoted the big three, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, and Gary Player, rather than the big four with Casper. And so they got all the notoriety. They got all the appearances. They got all, you know, all the stuff that went with it. Yeah, they won majors, and they won tournaments along the way, but so did Billy Casper. But Billy Casper was a very quiet, non-assuming guy, you know, and, you know, he said it never really bothered him, but, you know, it had to a little bit because a player of that caliber, an athlete like that, you know, they want to be recognized for their ability. And you know, Nicklaus and Player and Palmer, they all said that, you know, when they were on the leaderboard, they all looked around to see where Casper was because with Casper's putting stroke, he was always a threat. You know, Casper had a huge family. He was a family man. He has a wonderful business. He's built a tremendous business since he has left the game of golf, or you know, after he quit playing. And he's going to be remembered for being one of the most gentle and kindest tour professionals that ever lived, Carlos.
And it's unfortunate, like you say, that he, after his death, is that he has received so much fame and being such a great player. Hopefully he'll get his dues and his name will, like you say, his legacy is secure, but hopefully we'll get to know more and people will get to know more about Billy Casper. But Fred, another legend left us last week. And not long ago, we talked about Charlie Seaford. That was when President Barack Obama presented him with the Presidential Medal of Freedom, becoming only the third golfer after Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer to receive this country's highest civilian honor. Well, Seaford, who overcame death threats, heckling from spectators, and sabotage on the golf course to become the first African-American golfer on the PGA Tour in 1961, and who was often called the Jackie Robinson of his sport, died on Tuesday at a hospital in Cleveland. He was 92. The PGA of America confirmed the death of Seaford, who recently suffered a stroke. No cause of death was given at the time. Mr. Seaford learned to play golf while working as a caddy at a segregated country club in his native North Carolina and tried for years to compete on the tour of the Professional Golfers Association. He was turned down year after year because of the PGA's Caucasian clause, which required its member to be white. Despite a career that was riddled with racial taunts and saw him subject to constant ostracizing, Seaford rose to become the first African-American ever inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame. Although Seaford was never allowed to participate in such tournaments as the Masters, four-time champion Tiger Woods directly relates his success to the battle Seaford waged. Fred Charles Seaford was also more deserving of more accolades than the ones he received.
Yeah, you know, you and I just cannot fathom the indignities and the hurdles that Charles Seaford was forced to endure just to play professional golf in the late 1950s and 1960s. As you mentioned, he broke the color barrier. He was the Jackie Robinson of professional golf. You know, prior to the PGA changing its rules in 1961, blacks were not even allowed to participate on tour, and much like the Negro Leagues in baseball, golf had its own segregationist leagues. As a young boy growing up in North Carolina, Seaford caddied and dreamed of being a professional golfer. He won the United Golf Association's National Negro Open six times. So, I mean, he was the best African-American player at the time. In 1957, he won the Long Beach Open, which was not an official PGA Tour event, but was co-sponsored by the PGA. Seaford competed in the U.S. Open in 1959 for the first time and tied for 32nd place. He became a full member of the tour in 1961 when they finally changed the rules, thus becoming the first African-American to join the PGA Tour. He went on to win two official money events, the 1967 Greater Hartford Open and the 1969 Los Angeles Open, and finished in the top 60 in overall winnings in his first 9 years as a member of tour. Now, that's pretty good, finishing in the top 60. today, guys just want to finish in the top 125, you know, just to keep their card. But, you know, finishing in the top 60 year in and year out for 9 years, that's pretty good stuff. He also won, Carlos, the 1963 Puerto Rico Open and the 1971 Sea Pines. He tied for 21st at the 72 U.S. Open, his best finish in a major tournament. He competed in the PGA Seniors Championship, which was then the only tournament for golfers over 50 back in the 70s. He won it in 1975. Charlie Sifford could be seen striding the fairways and taking a swing with a always had a big cigar in his mouth. He received the Presidential Medal of Freedom in November, only the third professional golfer behind just Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus to be so honored. I'm sure golf is not filled with as much diverse ethnicity as he would like, but it has come a long ways since he broke the color barrier in 1961. He was an American original, Carlos, and he will be missed.
He will be missed, and we shall all remember, you know, it's a shame that he became a full professional, you know, in his late 40s, because he didn't have the full membership until 1964, and in his late 40s and past his prime, that's when he won those two tour tournaments. But that should tell you how good he could have been if he would have been playing earlier. So he will certainly be missed. And here we have paid tribute to these two true legends of the sport that passed away this past week, Billy Casper and Charles Sifford. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to have our final putts, and we're going to start talking. I'm going to start talking about something. I'll leave it there. When we come back, we'll talk about it.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our final putts. Fred, I'm going to take this one first. I have to take this out of me. I have to talk about it, you know. As you all know, I'm from the beautiful tropical Caribbean paradise island of Puerto Rico. We know how to enjoy beaches all year long. And we have patented the art of beauties and bikini showing off on our beaches. But what the Sports Illustrated team did with the swimsuit issue this year melted the snow storms up north and made the summer come early here to the Caribbean. When I saw the cover, it immediately became harder and harder to prevent my jaw from dropping as low as Hannah Davis' lower part of her bikini. I guess the only one estranged of that was the one that wasn't estranged was on that cover was her boyfriend, Derek Jeter. He must know better than that. But if you don't know, Hannah was born 24 years ago in the island of St. Thomas, just a half-hour flight from here. You already know where she got that heat from. But she wasn't the only one to capture my attention. Being a sports guy, I had to look for the athletes on the issue and found Caroline Wozniacki, who stunned in a white bikini. Again, after looking at her pictures, it kept becoming harder and harder to understand the real reasons why Rory McIlroy split with her last summer. I mean, he deserves to be sued for that, not for the Horizon thing. It's incredible. I don't understand it. Then you start to look at Ronda Rousey. You know, the UFC's baddest woman who stripped down to her bathing suit as well. You can't imagine that is the same punishing woman in the octagon. I have to second what my friend said. You know, a friend of mine said, she can punish me anytime, anywhere, not only in the octagon. She's one of those real women that now appear more on these issues. But she wasn't the only real woman to appear in this year's edition. Sports Illustrated also included plus-size model Ashley Graham in this year's issue in an effort to celebrate more curvy women. Fred, I could keep going, but I want to keep myself out of trouble if that's an option at this moment. So save me here. I'll leave it at just saying that they should have put the words in the cover, "Handle with care is hot."
Carlos, two things that I always look forward to is the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue and spring training baseball. Pitchers and catchers reporting, because I know spring is going to come. You know, it won't be that much longer. I'm going to make it, okay? So my issue came in the mail today. I always get it. It actually came a little bit early, but it came in the mail today. My wife kind of just threw it at me, So I did get to see the cover. I haven't looked at it. I know Caroline's in it, and I will spend some time with it tomorrow. But but yes, it's an annual event here. I like it very much. Hey Carlos, get your mind back on golf balls here. Lydia Ko finished T7 last week they had some bad weather in over there in Nassau, didn't they? Over in the Bahamas. A lot of wind, a lot of rain, play was halted and, started back. Envy Park finished T5, two spots better, but not enough to surpass Ko. So Ko hangs on to her number one ranking for one more week. Phil is in the news this week. He announced that he is going to play in the Honda Classic. Phil has been spending a lot of time in the gym. I put in 4 months now of being very diligent. I feel better than I have in a long time. I've been able to practice hard and work on my game. I think long term, having a little bit less pressure on my joints is going to be a good for somebody who's got arthritis. I also find the more I work out, the better I feel and less symptoms I feel. So I'm excited. I've been slowly over the last 4 or 5 years cutting out things in my diet that cause inflammation in my body. I feel better and better, the best I have in a long time. Swing speed is coming back. I've been able to, late in the round, finish rounds off with energy and strength and stamina as opposed to getting tired. So that's a good thing. You know, Carlos, I've been saying for some time that Phil, this arthritis thing bothers him more than he lets on and more than anybody knows. I mean, it just has to. It's a grind, traveling and walking those golf courses and playing professional golf. You know, he's 44 years old and he's got this arthritis. I know it's got to be a problem for him. And watching his diet and getting some extra workout in, I'm sure that's a good thing. Hey, just in case you want to, you'd like to have a hotel for a mere $300 million. You can buy the hotel at Glen Eagles, where they had the Ryder Cup last fall. The distillers that make Tanqueray own that property, and they're decided to cash in while the market is strong and pocket a little cash there. So just in case you got a few extra shingles in your shekels in your pocket you don't know what to do with, you can jump over there and get yourself a hotel, and I'm sure Kieran will come and visit you. Maybe he can run it for you, maybe. How about that? Sumatra Tour starts this week, actually. We've got 23 tournaments on the Sumatra Tour this year. It's grown. Carlos, the Sumatra Tour has grown from 15 tournaments in 2013 to 23. Eight tournaments, a 50% increase in just a couple years here. The total purse has jumped from $1.65 million to $2.73, so not quite double, but, it's way up there. The schedule has some new events. It's got, there's a lot of good young players playing out there. And if the Sumatra Tour comes to your neighborhood, any of the listeners out there, they should try and get out and watch some of the young ladies play, because Those are the ladies you're going to be seeing playing on the LPGA Tour before very long. One more thing, Carlos, I want to cover real quick here. Tom Doak, who we talked to last summer, has an article in Lynx Magazine, the spring issue, and he lists underrated golf courses around the world, and he lists one of my favorites, which is Mid Pines in Pinehurst, and it's a Donald Ross golf course. It's right across the street from Pine Needles, owned by the same family. Peggy Kirk Bell family. And just they did a renovation on it last year, and it took it back to what Ross had it when he designed it way back when. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful golf course. Really enjoy playing there. And Doak is a master, of course, and he knows from where he speaks. So, Carlos, that is all I have for you tonight. I'll let you wrap it up.
Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf, and thank you for listening to us for the past hour. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Darren McEntee, Managing Director of Cork Tree Limited. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also through TuneIn or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. So happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.